Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rusland, today we have... Well, first of all, I should say where we are. This is a special issue of A Bit of Culture, where we are recording in the Ilham Gallery at Menara Ilham, which is the third tallest building in Kuala Lumpur, I have been told. There is an exhibition here, which is about the art and culture of Kuala Lumpur since 2009 to 2017, and BFM has been included in this show. And I'd like to just prove, first of all, that we are, in fact, in front of actual human people, an audience, most of whom have elected to be here of their own free will. And if I could just ask, perhaps if the audience, could you just...
Applaud.
Applaud, please. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. So no pressure to our two guests. We have the return of one of the founding fathers of A Bit of Culture, BFM's very own Sharad Kooten.
Always a pleasure.
And we have the return of curator of the Georgetown Literary Festival, but now, more importantly, with her first novel, Bernice Chorley.
Hello. I love the show. I love the show.
Right. Well, Bernice's book is fresh out, and we will be talking about that in a moment. But our three topics this week will be, topic number one is, should we even bother to know the news? Topic number two is train station and global storytelling. And finally, topic number three, Bernice and creating characters. So topic number one, should we even bother to know the news? I have been away from Malaysia for 3 weeks, and I just got back. And in the 3 weeks that I've been away, I barely looked at Malaysian news. And it has been fantastic. I feel so much better for it. And I am now back. I just got back yesterday, and I'm preparing to re-immerse myself in Malaysian news watching. And I imagine that when I open up my computer and look at the websites, it's going to be like the final scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and, you know, with face melting and head exploding as I look at the full horror of what we have. But I'm wondering, should I even bother? Is there anything to be gained by knowing everything that's going on?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I choose to not look at Malaysian news all the time because it's you know, you wake up in the morning, you want a cup of coffee, you put some music on. The last thing I want to do after that is to read the local news. So I don't. I just don't.
But Bernice, I mean, the question is the Malaysian news exceptionally bad? I mean, world news is bad enough. Mm. We have trends in the Korean Peninsula. We have that story of that handsome Iraqi art college student who was murdered just because he was handsome by some fundamentalists. I mean, and you can go on with the global news, which is equally toxic and full of really, you know, stories that suggest to you that the human person can't be redeemed, that the human species, rather, can't be redeemed.
Yes.
But, Sharad, you are in the business at BFM of news gathering.
Pity me. Yes. Yeah. So every morning I aggregate news for our listeners, and, you know, I'm filled with levels of toxicity that will, you know, pay dividends in my 60s. With, I guess my knees will go, my liver will, you know, shut down, and my brain will turn to mush. So, you know, I'm hoping to be compensated handsomely now because the future is rather bleak. But yes, I do it because in some sense, we need to frame the news. We need to frame this toxic news. I mean, to the extent it's toxic, there's some good stuff out there too. And sometimes you get to talk about stuff that makes you feel that the human species can be redeemed, that, in fact, we are not as hopeless and mean.
But Sharad, as a news curator, that's not actually news.
Well, some of the good stuff is. I mean, okay, give me 10 minutes
news.
To remember the happy news from the last week. But yes, in the meantime, Bernice, you can talk.
Yeah, okay, so I don't, because Google, you know, I like things to stay the same. I'm a creature of habit. So Google News recently changed its look. And that was a real deterrent. I'm like, no, I don't like this anymore. So yes, I don't read the news, but I am on social media. And inadvertently, you will see friends and, you know, people who will post various things about the news. So you are forced to read things that you are, you know, slightly piqued by. I go straight to the Guardian page. I go to the arts and culture page and I click on television, radio, books. That's the kind of news that I would like to
read.
But
even cowardice. Isn't that cowardice?
Well, yes. And so what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with cowardice? But I ask you, even if you did stop reading the news, the hard news in particular, would it stop people from around you from talking about it? I mean, who can get away from talking about Kim Il-sung or a Donald Trump or even Brexit? You were recently in Britain. I mean, people will continue to talk about what is in the news.
So what you're saying is, one, we will be contaminated whether we like it or not, and two, we will be informed whether we like it or
yes.
not.
Yeah,
so
in a nutshell, yes. I mean, you're going to be dragged into it because it's... You're in it. You're not outside of it. There's no shutting it off. It's not like
you
a television
shut it off
zone.
If you shut off the internet. If you get offline, then you are really, really sort of
contained. But Bernice,
contained.
Your new novel,
yes.
Once We Were...
There.
I'm trying to read the cover upside down. It's set in the 90s during Reformacy period. So you were in the news, as it were. Mm-hmm. No, you weren't in the news, but you were involved with everything that was happening at that time.
Mm-hmm. And, so, Sherrod.
All right, but it informed you, it excited you, and you've now created a book out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you've just said you've opted out of today, so you've got nothing to
you
say about
choices.
Today.
You have choices. I think I chose to write about this particular time. There is nothing apart from I think a book by Faisal Tehrani about the Malaysian Reformasi. It was an intriguing time. It was a tumultuous time. It changed a lot of us. I think a lot of us are who we are now because of what happened in 98. And because we were on the streets, we were angry. So because we suffer from political, historical amnesia, I really wanted to write about a time, you know, especially for the millennials, right? A lot of you were still in diapers when we were running the streets and getting tear gassed. I wanted to write about this very, very important, pivotal time in Malaysian history.
Yeah,
and that's why it says for mature audiences only.
Absolutely.
On the cover. You know, there was Sabri Zain's book as well.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and that was, you know, came out of a blog he ran that mm-hmm. documented, you know, almost kind of day
yes.
account of what was
I
happening.
Yeah,
as well.
But
yeah.
My point is, yes. So there you were getting involved with and being cited by those times, but now will you have nothing to say about now? Do you not care about now?
Of course I do. I care about the now, but then we were part of the news. The world spotlight was we had some of the best journalists in the world in KL. The trial was written about. I mean, it was, I think we were fueled by anger because we believed that we could change the country. It was about change. It was about us putting ourselves in the news to get what we thought we could get out.
Yeah.
Of
by
it,
the way, Bernice, you keep saying we.
Yes.
Hang on.
Right. Okay, there's this other side of it, right? I think what I understand what Cam is saying is that if you now distance yourself from contemporary political dynamics, are you then robbing yourself of the possibility of engaging with it in the future? But the other side of it is, yes, I mean, in some sense you do, but I think you can engage without being, you know, overwhelmed by it, I think.
Okay. Are you talking about Malaysian news or are you talking about news in general? I mean, talking about the, you know, sort of keeping tabs on Trump, you're keeping tabs on
G20.
Yeah, but
Trump, that's entertainment. For Malaysians, that's just entertainment.
But
what do we really care if he's removed 20 million people from healthcare? Really, what do we care? We've got nothing to do with it.
Well, I would disagree. Never mind.
Well, I mean, I feel sad for them, but at the same time, you know, emoticon sad face. But you know, really, well, anyway, we must move on. But I just want to say very briefly, though, where we are right now in Ilham Gallery, surrounded by artwork that has been created from 2009 to 2017, the baleful years of Malaysia's existence. It's actually quite inspiring to see that people are still engaged and are creating exciting and interesting work. So I just want to add that. We're going to move on, though.
Yes.
Move on.
Yes.
All right. Topic number two, Sherrod, train station.
But the reason you keep saying 100 is because there were 100 directors that participated in the making of this film. How many of you here actually saw or watched Train Station? Anybody here? Nobody. Absolutely. One person. So we get some feedback from you perhaps after the show. But the point of this is it was an attempt at creating a global story. And as you see that, and if you guys are on Netflix, you would have maybe watched Sense8 by the Wachowski sisters, formerly the Wachowski brothers of Matrix fame, who've really tried to put together a global story. And I was thinking, you know, that's an interesting conundrum for contemporary, you know, creative writers and filmmakers and such, is that the idea of creating a global story, and I would contrast it with perhaps the fact that in, you know, plays, Shakespearean plays perhaps, or the novels of those from 19th and 20th century were universal in character. So you think of movie or a novel, very specific in place, and the characters conform to the reality of that very specific place, and they tell a story, but a story which we can all identify with. And that's
and be engaged.
That's right. So then we call that, you know, we talk about the character of universality in a story that might be very of that sort. But here what you had is, so across many different backgrounds, right? So 100 different scenes, as it were, or places.
In 25 different countries.
25 different countries. The same character, but different actors. So you expect
40 different
to follow through with the story and the characters, even as they change. They go from Mumbai to Dubrovnik, or I'm making this up, but they go to many places. Now, after a while, you just forget who they are, because they're not told. You're not told, oh, no, you're now in Iran, because there was a segment from Iran. And which reminds me, the segment from Iran was so superbly acted, where segments from other parts, other contributors, were so poorly acted. So the thing that happened was, it was very uneven, and that's why I felt that the film, in some ways, failed. But it had some interesting strategies. One, they were looping around, so the same part of the story get told more than once. You had these segues, all of which added up to this rather ambitious attempt to tell a global story.
But
it failed, I think.
So it was not successful.
In my eyes, it wasn't.
Does that mean
my friend fell asleep after 20 minutes? Right. I braved through it.
But does that mean then that the endeavor of trying to tell a global story is doomed to failure?
I don't know. I mean, that's something for anybody who watches it, you know, you kind of say, does it, it's like a Hollywood, a Bollywood, musical thing where they're dancing in Mumbai and suddenly they're in, you know, in Switzerland, and then the backdrop keeps changing.
Sorry, didn't you say there was a Malaysian element?
Yes, there was a Malaysian element. Right. And that was interesting because when I watched the Malaysian element, I thought to myself, it doesn't quite work. It's not really true, you know. For the other scenes, I would know because, you know, I'm not really involved in those. I can't really tell, right?
But the way I would approach this is, for me, it's trying to disrupt genre storytelling. This kind of linear storytelling that we are used to.
That's
you know,
right.
We have a beginning, middle, and an end. We have one character, a protagonist we follow.
That linear, that general template is still there, except it's not as linear as it could. So the looping around does break that. But generally, you're moving. There is a plot.
So is it not... I mean, Bernice, you've just written a book, and you're a poet by background, mm-hmm. but your work is traditional, linear,
character-driven,
mm-hmm. three-act structure. Mm-hmm. I mean, could you find...
Are we segueing into my...
No, we are not, but I'm just asking.
This is not a chance to promote your book, not yet.
Oh, the,
not
the
yet.
Everything's a chance to promote your book, Bernice. But, I mean, would you be able to... Can you see yourself sort of breaking up structure so much and doing... Jumping all over the place like this?
It sounds like... I'm not familiar with this.
Have you seen Sense 8?
Yeah, I watched the first couple of episodes.
You weren't impressed?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it's trying to tell a global story in that it has characters in different parts of the world. So there's one in Korea, there's one in South
Nigeria,
America, in Africa, and so on and so forth. But I think it's difficult. It's difficult because you're trying to create sort of linear narratives from sort of cross-cultural characters. You have to have an understanding of the context of where these people are at, and then to create, you know, stories that are meaningful, are engaging, and I think some of it worked.
This is where I think there's
what
it gives up is that mm-hmm. meaningfulness of the specific place
right.
in which the actors.
Right.
In fact, the point of global storytelling, at least these strategies, is to pretend that the site is not important.
Yeah, so that it's not tokenistic. It's like, oh, let's have a character from South Korea or North Korea, whatever, just because it's.
Yeah, and in some ways they all kind of like conform to what cosmopolitans think of the world. So in some ways, culturally, it's actually quite homogenous. But the costumes change, the background, some of the language, you know, the cityscape changes. But actually, the values are quite cosmopolitan and quite homogenous. And I think the other thing is, in Sense8, they attempt to find coherence globally by saying that all these characters share the same mind space.
Right.
Right? And so you have these kind of fantastical moments where all the characters are actually in the same space and doing very naughty things together. But okay, so the erotic is actually the coming together. You miss you. You should have stayed beyond episode two.
They've cancelled the series, haven't they?
No.
Yes, they
well,
have.
Well, season two's out.
But yeah, they've cancelled the series.
We must move on, though. But so, Sherrod, if there was Train Stations 2...
And if it was much more erotic, yes, I would watch it.
Okay. All right. But can you give a blanket sort of thumbs up, thumbs down to Train Station?
Well,
would you
say
yes?
Well, I think we should all watch movies like that. I think we should look at things, artwork or films or what, but read novels that are ambitious, you know, in their intention. They fail. But I think it's worth putting that money down for something like that because something good might come.
Especially if
out
it helps
it,
you, helps
you,
know,
down
you
the
get
road.
Away from reading the news for a short while.
That's that's what I'm trying to do with the next novel. So
think of this space and the artworks here. I mean, they're not all successful, I don't think.
Sherrod, she's promoting the next book, let alone the first one. So, but we must take a break now. And in a moment, we shall return to Ilham Gallery and a bit of culture here on BFM 89.9.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it. All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold-cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
Thank you. And we're back in Ilham Gallery. Thank you, people. With a bit of culture. With my guests today was Mikam Raslan, Sherrod Kutan, and Bernice Chorley. And now, Bernice, topic number three, creating characters for your new novel, Once We Were There.
Right. As Arundhati Roy says, I mean, the folks in my book, and this is a term that I really didn't quite understand until I started writing this novel. A lot of my work is actually very personal. The sort of memoir, which is about my family, I trace back 100 years of the family of the Chorleys and the Lows coming to Malaya. I started as a poet, so my work is extremely personal. So this was something that I really wanted to try and do. I mean, to make the leap from poetry to the novel is huge. You know, the words conspire in a completely different way. So what I suppose I want to talk about, the folks in my book, include the city of KL. I really wanted to sort of to write about a city, to give it some sort of life, to give it breath, to give it texture. And so it looks at KL from multiple viewpoints. The main characters are Delanix Regea. She doesn't have a race. She's named after the flame of the forest, so the Latin name Delanix Regea. She falls in love with Omar, who is half English, half Malay. She's a journalist in a magazine called The Review. She documents the streets, and actually, I used one of your pieces that you wrote for Saxi. So Saxi is in the book. There are a lot of facts in the novel, but creating these characters was something that I had a lot of difficulty with. Finding the voice, finding the texture of the physicality of the person, you know. So I worked on the first draft. It took me 3 years to write the first draft, and in the last 4 years, I've basically been revising the novel. And as a poet, not a novelist, I mean, I can call myself a novelist now, but a year ago, I decided to work with a wonderful writer, very respected Malaysian novelist called Chua Guat Eng. And the most extraordinary thing was this, that I realized that in order for a piece of fiction to work, your characters have to be real. They have to live in the world. You have to be able to talk to them, to touch them, to sit in your car and have a conversation with them, say goodnight to them when you're going to bed. And I'm in love with my characters. I miss them now. I miss them now that the book is done. I'm like, oh my God, what do Bernice, I do now?
Bernice, you mentioned review. And when Bernice mentioned review, she was actually alluding to a magazine that we all were involved in at some point in time in the mid-90s called Men's Review. And that was also quite a groundbreaking mm-hmm. magazine. It was a men's magazine, but attempted to do, substantial, issues as well as the fluff and laddish stuff. But the important thing is that there are autobiographical elements in
yes,
your book,
absolutely.
Right?
Of course,
and I wanted to mention this because my mother's first novel called The Tessellated Path is a semi-autobiographical novel. Mm-hmm. And she asked me to read it with some trepidation because she knows her son will be very honest with her. I said to her, you know, Mom, you didn't allow your character to break free from you. Mm. That, you know, the foundations of your
yes.
character, it was yourself, mm-hmm. But she didn't come into her own. She, you know, you really should have let her go.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's part of the problem, letting go of these facts and allowing them to mm-hmm. bloom into something
no,
much
absolutely,
more
absolutely.
Substantial.
And it's a process. It's actually quite painful because you have this idea of who your female protagonist should be. And, you know, Del is not strong. She's very flawed. I mean, I think some of the readers who read the book will be shocked at the kinds of things that she does. So it's about people who are lost in KL, you know, people who try to survive, some do, some don't. But I think at the heart of it is really about this city. I think KL is one of the most fascinating places on the planet. I love this city, and I really wanted to sort of bring it to life in a way that I've never done before in all the writing that I've done. But at the same time, right, I've lost my train of thought now.
Well, can I at this point issue a correction? I used the word trepidation just in reference to my mother. My mother is fearless. There was no trepidation. She just thought, okay, here it is, son. You read it. Tell me what you think.
Well, can I offer some trepidation then?
Yeah.
It just so happens
yes.
that, well, I'm a writer too.
Yeah.
And I've been writing a book recently, which I'm a bit behind Bernice, but I've also been working with Guat.
With Guat, yeah.
And seeing as we're all self-promoting today, it's
not me.
It's a sequel to a book I wrote 10 years ago called Confessions of an Old Boy. So it's with this character called Dutton Hamid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have my approach to when I create characters,
right.
and perhaps we can compare and contrast, that I've done a lot of work in theater, and I haven't acted myself, but as a director, I've worked with actors. And, you know, actors have to imagine that their character is the center character of that play.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to inhabit that character fully, almost to the detriment and the absence of everybody else. So every time when I'm writing and I click into somebody else, then that person, I have to almost be an actor,
mm-hmm.
and be that person. And that person is the central character in their own story.
Mm-hmm.
And they just happen to be intersecting at any given moment with another character
mm-hmm.
who happens to think that they're the centerpiece of the
right,
story.
Right.
So that's my approach anyway with characters.
Well, the thing is, I started writing Del's POV from the first person. So I wrote, I think, 20,000 words, and I chucked that out, and because I decided that I needed to have more texture. So Omar and Marina's POVs are from the third person. So it's a combination of first person and third person, and it works. But it's a bit unconventional. I mean, not all novelists do this. But so that's what I ended up doing.
You know, I think one interesting challenge for many of us who are kind of middle class, KLites, who, you know, speak in the English language, and is that we suffer from, and correct me if I'm wrong, from a deep sense of inauthenticity. And that when we want to create characters that are true to this place we call Malaysia or Kuala Lumpur, we always fight with ourselves about what that person should sound like.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, what their cultural references should be. Should they be global? Should we always be talking about Paris and London and New York or Tokyo even? And I say even because, yeah, we're still ambivalent about our Asian references. The question is, you know, was that a challenge for you, this inauthenticity?
Dialogue.
Yeah, the dialogue.
Dialogue,
you know,
is extreme. It's one of the hardest things to write. Absolutely.
Because the language of it, right?
Oh, okay.
Oh my.
I mean, that it should be authentic. And I think this
yeah.
is the thing. I mean,
yeah.
with such a multilingual space, I mean, I kind of disagree with you about KL being the most interesting place on, you know, a city on planet Earth. I think there are a lot of more interesting cities, but it is an interesting city because it's got people, and it's got people from around
the world.
It's got
people like us.
Yeah, and people like us who, you know, who struggle with inauthenticity, which is actually a modern problem, isn't it? It is a global problem. It's not a specifically Malaysian problem.
Can I interject here and ask you a question, Sherrod?
Yeah.
Sherrod, Bernice and I, we've written fiction. You're a writer, and you're doing a lot of broadcasting now, so you haven't had much time. But you desperately want to. And
I have aspirations.
And there's your mother who's written fiction, but you yourself, you're not really tempted so much by fiction, but you want to do nonfiction.
Yeah, I'm very scared to say because I do have a novel in me.
I think it's a crazy thing actually to step forward and write fiction.
It's totally crazy.
I'm wondering, Sharad, what's the reason why you haven't been able to make that step?
Well, one, I'm very lazy. Two, I have a crazy job at a crazy radio station that keeps me occupied a lot, and you know, but I do think it's all these challenges, mm-hmm. you know, that come from trying to find a way of telling the story in a language that I still, in some level, some part of my brain haven't accepted as being a Malaysian language, you know. And I think Saleh bin Jonet at one point said, you know, declared that English is a Malaysian language. It's native to us now, and we should stop, you know, agonizing about it. But all these things and the fact that, you know, I think writing takes a huge amount of discipline.
Absolutely.
Extraordinarily proud of you for, you know, not just attempting it, but actually publishing it.
Yeah. Well, it took six years.
And it takes a village to write a novel, doesn't it? But, you know, you mentioned Guat, so she's the other villager.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna have to wrap this one up now, Bernice. Mm-hmm. But finally, you feel satisfied with your characters?
Yeah. And I miss them very much. Like I said, you know, I wish that I could still hang on to them. But I do talk to them from time to time. I'm not a crazy person. Yeah. But I do talk to them because I do believe that they're out there in the world. They are out there. They're still living. They have lives. And they've moved on from the terrible things that happened to them in the book. So, yeah, they're very much alive and well in my life.
Okay. And by the way, folks, you can purchase Once We Were There at any good bookshop near you?
Yes, it should be in all the major bookstores in Malaysia and Singapore. You can buy it online from the Epigram Books website. And Pak Chong is also here from Gerak Budaya, which is our distributor in Malaysia. So
Right. I think we've done enough promoting of your book for now, so we're going to move on to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest, and I'm going to go first. My recommendation is, I've been away. I was in England. This is a recommendation I've made before, but I'm going to make it again because there's a new season of this comedy show called The Windsors, which is the British royal family. So all these actors play them. It's incredibly rude. It's seditious. It's treason, I think, even. But it's also kind of loving, and it's just very funny satire. I don't even know if it's satire. It's just a broad comedy involving all the characters from the British royal family, except for the Queen herself. And it's just so rude. You must watch it. And it's called The Windsors. So that's mine. And Sharad?
Well, looking at that exhibit over there, it's an artwork about moving a house. And this is actually something that's quite common to Southeast Asian homes. And it reminded me of a professor of mine of anthropology, Roxana Watterson, who wrote a book called The Living House, The Anthropology of Architecture in Southeast Asia. So if you're interested in sort of going further, Watterson's book might help. And also just reminded me of the curious young academic when I was at university who would scratch herself red as she did her, you know, graduate seminars with us because she was so nervous. She's now, you know, retiring. It tells you how fast time flies. But anyway, it's an excellent book. And the cover of the book includes an image of people carrying a house. And this is, of course, the mode of what actually happened in that particular artwork. And I can't tell you much more than that. But there. So, okay. Roxana Watterson.
Because Sharad keeps pointing at an actual house.
That has been built
here.
But this is radio, and nobody else can see this.
Right, okay. Well, that's why I'm describing it. Okay, so that's one more time.
Roxana Watterson's The Living House, The Anthropology of Architecture in Southeast Asia.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It also reminds me of Liu Kung Yu's work, Cadangan-cadangan Untuk Negaraku, that kind of looks at what homes and houses are and the way we embellish it, and, you know, we'd use Doric columns and Ionian columns. And he had this whole, I don't know how many of you saw that, an extraordinary work built up almost in a kind of architectural fashion from photographic material, meaning the actual photographs are cut and layered to give this almost three-dimensional look to these mural-like works that, you know, stand maybe 20, 10 feet by 20 feet or 30 feet. Extraordinary works. If ever get re-exhibited, you must catch it. Liu Kung Yu's Cadangan Cadangan Untuk Negaraku, Proposals great. For My Nation.
Yeah, they're really great artwork. Bernice, what's your recommendation?
Right. Also another British television series. It's called Last Tango in Halifax, created by the wonderful Sally Rainwright, who did Happy Valley. So it's set in Yorkshire, and it stars Derek Jacobi and Anne Reid, two sort of great British veteran actors, who fall in love after not having seen each other for 60 years. So they were sort of childhood sweethearts. One moved off to Sheffield and the other one stayed in Yorkshire. And they are sort of reacquainted on Facebook. So their grandchildren put them up on Facebook and they meet. They fall in love and they decide to get married 24 hours after having coffee. It's a wonderful story. So they're both in their 70s, and you've got this sort of host of characters, really interesting characters. So he has a daughter, she has a daughter, and, you know, there's different, as one's a farmer, the other one is an Oxford graduate. But it's just wonderful. I mean, these two incredible actors. It's two seasons only, created by Sally Rainwright, who also did Happy Valley.
So Happy Valley, I started watching that.
Yes.
It was not a happy story.
No, not at all.
Unwatchable. It was so miserable. Yeah. So is this as miserable as that?
No, it's not. It's again, she says, the creator says, this is her most personal story because it actually happened to one of her parents. So.
Okay, all right. So that's, what's
Last Tango in Halifax.
Last Tango in Halifax.
Yes.
Available from all your legal downloading sources.
Absolutely.
As indeed is the Windsors. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Only remains me now to thank and congratulate and wish all
thank
the best.
Thank you. I wish you all the best with your book.
Oh, yeah. Mine will be out.
At
some point in time. It's looking more like next year now. But it's done. It is done.
Yes.
Sharad Kutan.
Always a pleasure, Cam.
And myself, Cam Ruston. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please do so on our Facebook page where nothing happens. but do just join us because then you know you're in the company of other sort of like quiet people. But otherwise, Sharad is all over Twitter.
Yeah. At Sharad Kutan.
Bernice, where are you?
Facebook,
mm-hmm. Instagram.
Yeah, very rarely.
Yeah, me neither. And also I'd like to thank our audience who have bravely and very kindly stayed with us throughout, as far as the eye can see. And so that brings us to the end of this week's show. And please join us next week on radio for a bit of culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%, APR 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.